interviewing Professor Asher Hobson at his house outside of Blue Mounds. It's November 9th, 1983.
Well, should we start by going through the questions and seeing how
Yeah, you go ahead.
Okay. The first set of questions has to do with the background of your life that brought you to Madison. That's really the concern there. And so I suppose the way to begin is to ask when and where you were born.
I was born November 26, 1889, in Queenemo, Q-U-E-N-E-M-O, Kansas, Osage County. You have to get used to Indian names. Queenemo is just a village, still is just a village.
Can you describe things that happened in your childhood at home? Had to do with your later development?
Well, I could describe a lot of things that would be of no interest to this project.
Yeah.
But one that would is that every summer during my eighth grade school experience, from the first to the eighth, actually, I stayed summers with one grandfather. Both my grandfathers were farmers, and both places were a nice place to stay because they both had farms that had running streams through them. And for a boy, that helps a lot. And, of course, all grandmothers are good cooks. But I stayed mostly with one rather than the other. They lived 20 miles apart. And when, before the days of the auto, you didn't commute between them at all. If you were going to make a trip, you had to spend all day with a horse and buggy. I stayed with one because my father was the oldest child, and the two youngest of five children were not very much my senior. So there was much more activity at that farm, and there was the other, and that's the farm I stayed at every summer. Now, I mention this because that was a directing force in my whole life. Go on to another question, and I'll explain it why. Someplace you asked me how I entered agricultural economics, didn't you?
Yes.
All right, well, when I graduated from the University of Kansas in 1913, the only job that anybody offered me was a high school teaching job at $1,000 for 9 months. The $1,000 was all right. I think that was in line. But they wanted me not because of my economic training, but they wanted a debating coach. And I had debated on a Kansas team my senior year, and I wasn't interested in becoming a debating coach because I wasn't an outstanding debater anyway. And so I decided to do graduate work, and since my major was economics, I had to do graduate in some form of economics. And there was no hesitancy. I was going to do it in agricultural economics merely because of my experience on the farm. I just loved the farm. Uh-huh. If I'd had enough money to go into farming, I'd probably have gone into farming after graduating. But I didn't have that kind of dough. As a matter of fact, I didn't have any dough. So I decided to go and do graduate work in agricultural economics. At that time, there were two outstanding schools. One was Cornell, because they had an outstanding farm management department, and the other was Wisconsin. I had decided to go to Cornell, because Cornell didn't have any out-of-state tuition at all. They're just the same for everybody. But the head of the economics department at Kansas had worked in Washington on the 1910 census, and H.C. Taylor of Wisconsin had also worked on that census, and he knew him, so he said to me, "You go to Wisconsin." He just almost demanded it, and I did, and that's why I came up here.
So you came to Wisconsin to do your
graduate work in agricultural economics.
What?
And I wouldn't have chosen agriculture if I hadn't lived on the farm every summer. Oh, shucks.
What were the problems that you deal with in agricultural economics?
What's that?
What were the problems you dealt with in agricultural economics in those days?
Oh, you had two or three divisions, management of the farm, marketing of farm products, agricultural finance. And H.C. Taylor was pretty strong on agricultural history, too. I think those four would probably be the main divisions at that time. But as a matter of fact, I haven't thought of the answer to that question.
Sure.
Who were some of the other key professors that you worked with as a graduate student? Besides,
well, here at Wisconsin, there were mostly two, H.C. Taylor and B.H. Hibbard. Now, we took other courses, of course, that they... Richard T. Ely was overhead of the economics department. Of course, we took a lot of courses over there.
Mm-hmm.
But statistics... I can't think of the fellow's name. You see, 1913, how long ago was that? Anyway, my memory don't serve me. But economics, I know, I took several professors in economics. Ely was more than any other. He was head of the department. Hibbard was marketing. I majored in marketing. H.C. Taylor was head of the department. And always, we kept in close contact all our life, H.C. Taylor and I. What's that?
I don't have Taylor on my list for agriculture economics.
Well, he was head of the department.
Made a huge mistake here.
I think this was the first department of agriculture.
I see. My list begins in 1925. I'll bet you he was
He started in 1907, and I came in as a graduate student in 1913, and yours don't start till 1925. Yeah, well. After a while, you're going to be as far behind times as I am.
I got accused of that just the other day. Somebody wanted to talk about 1950, and I said, that's not interesting. Talk about 1925.
Yeah.
Now, I see that you came into the department to teach in about 1931.
Well, that's when I came back not as a graduate student. I was here from 13 to 16 as a graduate student. And then I came back in 31.
What'd you do in between?
Yeah, I have to almost tell you my life history, I guess.
Almost.
I did a lot of things.
Were you at a university?
I was with State College. My first job was at State College of Agriculture at Pullman. And I taught there a year, and then I was made state director of farm markets. They just created a job, and I was made director. And that would be in 1917. Then 1919, Taylor was appointed chief of the Department of Farm Management in the Department of Agriculture. And I went with him as assistant chief. And I stayed there 2 years. Then I went as an assistant professor at Columbia University. Stayed there 2 years. Then I was appointed American delegate to the International Institute of Agriculture in Rome. And I stayed in Rome 5 years. Then I went to Geneva with the State Department. stayed there 2 years, and while I was there, I had permission to go to school, too. And I got a doctor's degree at the University of Geneva. In a division known as Graduate Studies in International Relations, which was set up by a Rockefeller grant when the League of Nations was located at Geneva. But it was attached to the University of Geneva for her degree-granting privileges. That's all, just a degree-granting. I wrote a thesis, and my thesis is number 6, and it's still going strong. I did graduate work in 29, but they wouldn't give me the final examination until I'd published 250 copies of your thesis. You had to be a millionaire to graduate there. So I had to wait till I got back to the United States and found a publisher, because it was a book. And I graduated in 31. Have we skipped some of them, gone so far? Have I skipped some of your questions?
No, you're doing just fine. Right on the target.
Have I got up to 31? No. I came back. After I'd written my thesis and a book on the operation of the International Institute of Agriculture, that's why the State Department let me go to Geneva, writing that book. Took me 2 years, but I did it. And then I came back in 29, and the Farm Board had just been set up by Hoover in 29, and they asked me if I'd stay over a little while to, as a sort of consultant on international relations, although that wasn't important because I did anything that they wanted me to. And then after that, I went with the Department of Agriculture in, they had an international service, people out in the fields, and I was headed there up for 2 years, and then I came back to Wisconsin in 31. Now, that's pretty complete, I guess, of what I did.
Yeah. Now, why is it that you came back to Wisconsin then?
Well, it's just a hunch more than anything else, except I didn't like civil service very well. Because civil service had a lot of brilliant people, but they had a lot of deadbeats, too, and you couldn't get rid of them, because if you fired them, the Civil Service Commission held a hearing, and you were on trial when trying to fire them more than the fellow that you tried to fire. So nobody did try. So I didn't like that setup very well. And I don't know whether that's sufficient explanation of why I came, but when the job opened up, I accepted it.
You were going to ask the same question. Go ahead.
Did someone ask you to take the job here? You recall who that was?
Well, that was Christensen asked me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I knew him in Washington.
You knew him in Washington.
Yeah. He was with the Farm Board.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that Hoover set up. He was secretary of the Farm Board when I was on the staff there.
Did you have to come to Madison for an interview or anything?
No. I knew him, and he knew me. But I was over in Europe attending an international conference for the State Department in 30. And Christensen asked me to come, and I said, no, I can't come until I talked to B.H. Shepard, my major professor, who was head of the department here. I said, I won't come until I talk to him. So I had to wait till I got back in August. And I came out and met Hibbard in Chicago. And while Hibbard was sorry, actually, that to have somebody else take over the department. He agreed to it. Mm-hmm. And I tried to teach him as a superior all the time.
Mm-hmm. Now, why was it that I see that he lasted for...
What's that?
He stayed on for about 8 years.
Yeah, till his death. Yeah. Oh, he was a top man in the department.
Why did he stop being chairman?
What's that?
Why did he stop being chairman of the department?
Well, I was appointed chairman. Was the reason he stopped. And that's why I had to see him.
Yes.
To see what his attitude was. If he objected to it strongly, I wouldn't have come.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I've always had great respect for Hibbert. Uh-huh. And his teaching and research, too.
And he felt that it was a good idea for you to become...
Yes, if anybody was going to take his place, he'd just soon have me or brother than anybody uh-huh. else.
Well, was he relieved of it by Christensen?
No, he was. I came in 31, and he was relieved the beginning of 32.
Uh-huh. By the time that you arrived at Wisconsin, was the department still one of the top ones, as it had been?
Well, I considered it so.
Mm-hmm.
I'd hate to defend it in court, but I assumed it was.
Mm-hmm. Maybe what we could do is to run down the names of some of the professors in the department, if you'd be willing, and you could describe a little bit about what they had to contribute in the way of teaching or their research or their service.
You see, that's 50 years ago, too, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I considered Hibbert
mm-hmm.
very tops at teaching and also at research. Next to him, I guess I'd put George Werwein,
mm-hmm.
Land Economics. Tops as a teacher and as a researcher, too. Then later, Parsons was a young man then, just finishing graduate work, but later... During my career at Wisconsin, he became a top teacher. And Charles was always good at both research and teaching. And Leopold, I consider him just an outstanding individual, but he was head of wildlife management, and he was connected with the department temporarily until the regents approved he as a department.
Yeah.
So I never considered him one of our staff,
uh-huh.
but he was connected with the department, and I considered him an outstanding teacher and researcher.
How would you, for the fine teachers, how would you describe the kind of teaching they did? What was it?
Well, I pondered that question because it's in there.
Yeah.
Truly, I don't know how.
Uh-huh.
The only method I know is the reaction of students, since you don't audit any of the courses. Who else do you depend on? At least it was reaction of the students that rated these people in my mind.
Yes.
Now, whether it rates on your mind, I don't know.
Well, that's how we've been rated. was there a standard approach to teaching that was used? In other words, did people stand up and lecture and that was teaching?
Well, there was a lot of lecturing done. I suppose there was lecturing done in every class except graduate
mm-hmm.
seminars. That could be many different forms.
Yeah.
Yeah, discussions, papers. But I never considered a standard. It just, I think, is the usual way of
yeah.
doing it.
Yeah. Could you, on the major researchers, could you comment about the contribution that each of them made in researching that
Well, I got to put another researcher in there, Froker, R.K. Froker, who was later dean. Mm-hmm. He was tops. He didn't teach much. He and I taught a graduate course in advanced cooperation. And later, he helped a graduate student, after he got out, organize one of the big milk plants in this, cooperative milk plants in this state, Lake to Lake. Froker.
Who was that?
What?
Who was that who organized the cooperative?
Well, if you'll tell me who's head of the cooperative division of the Department of Agriculture, that's his son. And so that's the same name of this fellow, and okay. I can't think of the name.
That's good.
But his son is head of the cooperative division of the Department of Agriculture. I may think of it after a while, but I don't know. Okay. He called on me less than 2 or 3 years ago here. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Now, what was it that Froker was known for?
Well, Froker was involved with cooperatives, mostly milk marketing. And he was a consultant to most any cooperative in the state, milk marketing, when they got in trouble, no matter what the trouble was. Mm-hmm. They didn't call on Froker. It might be business, it might be cooperative, it might be membership, it might be production problem. And he didn't service them in all the calls, mm-hmm. but he was on call for them. And his research, one of the outstanding was a method of measuring, now this is crudely put, but as I remembered, it was a method of measuring the value of milk by the solids, not fat, as well as butter fat. In other words, considering the other solids and the methods of measuring them. And that was a Herculean task. And after he worked out a method, then he had to get it adopted. I think it's pretty well adopted now.
That method that he developed is still in use?
I don't know, but I'm assuming so. But when you've been out 30 years, you don't know what's in use. You don't keep up with the times.
Sure. What was Hibbard's accomplishment in
research? Oh, he was a good teacher. He was a good researcher. And the only thing he could teach would be look at his publication mm-hmm. for a researcher.
When you say that Froker was helpful with the milk industry.
Yeah, that's a part of how does the extension serve the farmer.
Yeah.
I thought of Froker.
Uh-huh.
That he was a consultant on just about any problem they wanted to ask him, mm-hmm. and he helped on some of them.
Now, was he partially budgeted with extension, would you say? Did
they yes, he would be partially budgeted. Most of us were.
Uh-huh.
I was. My most effective work was in extension, working with agricultural organizations and farm leaders. Good many of us. Because that comes down to another question you ask about dean of the graduate, what is it, Slichter? And,
yeah,
well, you see, over in agriculture, we knew them, but we didn't get much money from them because we had the Agriculture Experiment Station and the Extension Department, which the rest of the university didn't have at that time.
Yeah.
They may have it now.
If you compare agricultural economics and rural sociology and departments like that that were in the College of Agriculture, did faculty members in those departments receive the same kind of as much support, I guess you'd say, from the experiment station as departments like bacteriology or agricultural chemistry?
I couldn't answer that except to say that we got fairly generous support. Now, I can't speak for sociology, rural sociology.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They, at one time, when Taylor was here, was part of the Department of Agriculture Economics, but when I came, they were separate.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew their staff, but a little about their operations.
Mm-hmm. Did your people in your department, have joint appointments occasionally with other departments at the university?
Well, we ourselves had Clarenbach, not the one in the legislature. Clarenbach was a joint appointment for a time with political science and ours.
Mm-hmm.
And we had Carstensen, I think, is in history and joint appointment with us in history. Now, beyond what we had, joint appointments, I can't tell you.
Yeah. How about the collaboration that people might have entered into in their research? Did people collaborate in research in agricultural economics?
Well, I thought so. Whenever I was on a research project, I got all the help that I deserved,
mm-hmm.
certainly. And we often had collaboration with the Department of Agriculture in Washington because they financed some of it, so it was joint with them. And I don't know if we had collaboration with the rest of the university, if that's what you have in mind.
Well, I'm interested to learn.
No, we have it with outside of the Department of Agriculture.
Was that just because it didn't occur to you to... You didn't need help from other people at the university, or did you feel there were sort of boundaries that you couldn't overstep?
Well, I think it never occurred to me that they'd be interested,
mm-hmm.
but frankly, I don't remember ever thinking much about it.
Mm-hmm. Fine. And I understand that the University of Wisconsin became well known for its work in cooperatives.
Yeah.
And I assume that had to do with your department.
Yes, it'd have to be our department.
What kind of work in cooperatives was it?
Well,
terribly ignorant.
We not only wrote about cooperatives, I put our bulletin on them. Schar's revised it later. And my name isn't on the bulletin because I revised a bulletin that was a staff effort many years ago. And then I revised it, and because I was revising a staff effort, I didn't want my name solely on it, but the dean and the head of the Department of Schools, Public Instruction, put my name on it when they reviewed it, because it was written for the schools. So that was a joint effort too, you see. And I often had lots of help from Folker and cooperation, as I was involved too, with organizations, agricultural leaders, but most of them were cooperative leaders,
mm-hmm.
you see.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as a matter of fact, I had Milo Swanton and his wife out here for lunch, what I call a farmhand's luncheon. I threw them every once in a while. I'm going to throw one for you people. A farmhand's luncheon, and he was head of the Wisconsin Council of Agriculture, which was mostly helping cooperatives. And I worked with him for years and years. Went with meetings to him and one thing and another, and I had he and his wife out, well, within a month now. I scheduled Dean Baldwin, his wife, and Milo Swanton and his wife out together because they were both close friends. But he got ill and couldn't come. So I had the Baldwins, and then about 2 weeks later, I had him and his wife.
Was part of your responsibility then to help develop cooperatives in Wisconsin? Were you an advocate for that approach?
Well, we were advocates, sure, because, you see, it was my philosophy that everybody else, they had to compete against great powers when they bought stuff, the machinery industry. And they were just individuals. They had no power to do any bargaining or anything else. It was my philosophy that the only way they could get that power would be through cooperation. I knew of no other way. And that, in my estimation, was raison d'etre, the reason of being. So, of course, we helped them. But we also criticized them. We were different. You know, they had a labor professor at the university. He never criticized labor.
Who was that?
I can't tell you. They changed him from time to time. He gave courses. We criticized cooperatives. Activities and some and when they individually, yeah. And we were damned and praised.
Could you give an example of the type of criticism you might, the specific criticism you might deal with?
Well, in my field, I gave a course, and in later years, my field was public policy. And, of course, we had some farm organizations that didn't agree with my policy at all. Farm Bureau did, fortunately, but Farmers Union was far more liberal. You see, all my life, I was a mossback conservative. Still, I am. And you get in controversies that way, and I expected it. And I didn't criticize people because they didn't agree with me. As a matter of fact, I was often surprised if they agreed with me.
Ira Baldwin was talking with us about the College of Agriculture and about Dean Christensen, and we got the impression that one of the reasons why he was brought to Wisconsin was that he would work on developing the cooperative movement.
Well, he was known as a cooperative leader because before he went to the farm board, he was head in the department of the division of cooperation. That was his business. So he was known all his life, his professional life, as a cooperative leader. And while I never heard express why specifically he was brought here, it don't surprise me to have you say that.
Were you involved in cooperation before you came to Wisconsin, too?
Yes, I was involved with cooperation out in the state of Washington when I was director of markets. I helped organize cooperatives to boost marketing. And always interested in cooperative because of the reason I gave you that unless they joined together and got some leverage and bargaining power, they were sunk. Well, they were at a disadvantage. And the only way I knew how they could get bargaining power was through cooperatives. So that was basic to my agricultural economic philosophy. It probably stuck out all over. I don't know.
Because of your efforts and your colleagues' efforts at the university for the cooperatives, how would you say actual cooperatives around the state were influenced. What happened in the state because of the university's efforts?
I'm just not able to answer. I have no reasoned judgment on your question. You have a list of committees there.
Yeah.
I want to comment on that when you get to it.
Okay. Maybe a little bit about your chairmanship of the department.
Yeah.
Our concern with asking about chairman is to try to find out how the faculty members worked among themselves to produce whatever the department ended up being. Were you... What kind of responsibilities and powers did you have compared to your colleagues in the department?
As chairman of the department, my powers were very limited because we did practically everything on a faculty determination. It was really, I was just really chairman of the committee. But I think that was the system in the university.
You found that, you came into the university and found that kind of system operating.
Yeah, that was part of the system, yeah.
Did you have, how often did the entire department meet, would you say?
Well, as a matter of fact, we met once a week. I think once a week at the University Club with the Department of Economics. That was a joint meeting, just a dinner meeting. We were there, and we even voted on the chairmanship of the Economics Department at those meetings, although we weren't part of it until Celery cut us off, I think in the 40s sometime. Yeah. That separated us. We never met more. Now, we had a meeting at the University Club. You've got the University Club in there, I know.
Yes.
I think I was chairman of the University Club of the board for four years, elected 4 different years, and that's because generally you just have it 1 year. But I had it during the war years, and we were in financial difficulties, so they let me worry with it 4 years. That's the way it was.
were all members of the department welcome at the joint meeting with economics?
They welcomed his salary that cut us off because... I don't think I should say because, I assume. But we voted the way he didn't want us to vote sometimes. So to cut down on that vote, he could just separate us. But don't put that down. I can't defend that in court.
Sure. Well, supposing someone had been in the department, maybe an assistant professor, and then they became an associate professor with tenure. What would have caused that to happen? Was there a time span that you thought you needed to meet, or how did you decide, and who was involved in making that decision?
We voted. Whenever it was brought up, we'd vote on it. And some people, I won't mention her name because don't do any good, we never promoted to full professor, and they were there some years. And it was all faculty vote.
Would a faculty member sort of nominate someone to be promoted, or would you, if you wanted
to... somebody would be asked to be promoted, and I'd bring it up to the department. And some of them, we just automatically brought up. And the voted on raising a rank.
Did the times have anything to do with number of promotions? I mean, I'm talking about like the Depression and the post-World War II period. Did that have any impact on the number and amount of...
I don't think it had anything to do directly. It did indirectly because during the early 30s, the Depression, we were strapped for funds. We even took a substantial reduction in salary. I know my reduction in salary, and I didn't complain, was about $1,200 a year. And so I think we had to be kind of careful how we increased expenditures, but it wasn't a direct consideration. It probably was a subconscious consideration.
Did offers from other colleges or universities to secure person services have anything to do with promoting?
No. Certainly it didn't influence me in any way. I don't know about the rest of the staff, whether it did or not, but I always said to them, if you can better yourself, do it. We won't stand in your way.
You mentioned salary waivers and told us the cut that you took. How did the other members of your department react toward the salary cuts?
I never heard any complaints, and I never made any complaints, because we were up against it, the university was. Mm-hmm. The legislature just didn't have the money to come through. That's the way I looked at it. Mm-hmm.
Do you recall how the cuts were determined?
No, I don't, but you ought to get that from the financial end. You talk about Peterson. Mm-hmm. I knew him well, belonged to a dinner club with him. Of course, he's dead. He would know.
Yeah.
And McCaffrey, if somebody remembers him, wasn't he ahead of Peterson, McCaffrey?
Yeah.
He would know. But you'd have to go to that source.
Mm-hmm. As the chairman of the department, what kind of relationship did you have with the dean's office in agriculture?
Well, I always had... I tried to keep my problems away from the dean if I could, but I always had access to him if I wanted to go, and had very close access to Christensen and Baldwin. And, of course, I was retired when Froker, or I'd had close access to him, of course. And the one that I had less close access would be Fred. Fred's mind and mine, great minds run in the same channel, isn't that it? Well, ours didn't run, but dull minds run in the same rut, and they didn't run there either. So we just had a different mentality. Now, wait a minute. I'm watching you, fellas. It's a load of cows. You just got to take up the time till about lunchtime, because I'm going out and tell them to put two plates out here for a farmhand luncheon.
Okay.
Sounds great.
Excuse me. Don't go out.
Here we go. We're on the second tape. Good. It's working.
Do you know where you were?
Yep.
Now, wait a minute, boys. I got some information for me. You asked me how I got in to agricultural economics, And here's my letter of resignation. I want to tell you, show you how I got out.
Okay.
You read it.
So you wrote to Professor Raymond Penn.
He was head of the department.
You're now hearing from a budding country squire.
Yeah.
Not the horseback riding kind, but rather the fence leaning, pipe smoking type, provided, of course, that the fence can be brought up to a state of repair that will support such squiring. In the summers and on occasional leaves of absence during the past several years, I have practiced this art. Up to date, however, the only results are those of my becoming a farmhand without pay. But I have higher aspirations, a lawn chair in the shade of an old apple tree. But this will take considerable time and a bit of doing. I must start now. It can't be done on crutches. You've had plenty of time.
Yeah.
For all of these reasons, I wish to retire from the academic profession. Will you kindly present my resignation to become effective at the end of the current semester? As you know, spring is a rush season for a country squire. Furthermore, I would like to do a little organized loafing in Florida before taking on this heavy task. That's a beautiful letter.
Yeah. You keep it. I got copy.
Oh, excellent. Thank you.
I thought you ought to know how I left.
Oh, yeah. What kind of relationship did the faculty members in the department have among themselves? Was there anything worth noting about that?
Well, as far as I know, they all got along fairly well. Some got along with others better. I think, as far as I know, in later years, I was the only controversial member.
You were controversial within the department?
Well, among members within the department.
Oh, why was that?
Well, I think along about 19, I retired as professor in 48. I would say 3 or 4 years before that, there was a move on the part of some members to elect a new chairman. Mm-hmm. I never objected to that, and I was continued to be appointed by the deans. I never even asked them to appoint me.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a move in the department to elect a new chairman, and that's, as far as I've concerned, all right. Whenever the dean wanted to do it, that was up to them. I never even discussed it with the dean.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No. And they never took any action in doing it. I never knew why, but I assumed, and this is an assumption, that I stood fairly high, I think, with the agricultural leaders,
mm-hmm,
of Wisconsin. Now, of course, I had some against me, but that's understandable, too. But I think I had more for me. But that shouldn't be given as a reason why they didn't act, because I don't know why.
Yeah.
They didn't act.
Well, what kind of debates would you have in the department over your differences? What kind of differences?
Well, the differences was that some people weren't promoted as fast as they thought they ought to be. I think that was the start of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we took a vote every year, and that vote was turned into the dean.
Mm-hmm.
So they could act on it whenever they wanted to. I transmitted with a letter saying this is it.
Mm-hmm. How would the time before the vote be passed? Would you say that anything about wanting to remain in the chairmanship?
No, I just said that at time we have to vote on chairman, and we got somebody to count the ballots. There was And we had committee on in the faculty for practically everything. Finance and for promotion. I had three advisors on promotions. And I never operated against the committee, but I made recommendations to it.
Could you describe or characterize your how you saw your role as chairman, what your purpose, your primary purposes were?
Well, I think that my role was that of the chairman of any operating committee. Now, I want to discuss with you some of the outside committees, which I think is more important than the inside committees to me. But you have one. My last operating committee was chairman of the social studies.
Yes.
Yeah. And that was pretty important. Now, I opposed in faculty the setting up these different divisions, including the social study board, because I said in the departments we have to go through so many hurdles now. Why set up another one? We're about to break our backs on the ones we have. But they set them up anyway. And I was made chairman later of the social studies division. And I considered it very important. Yeah, that division.
Does that mean you changed your mind about?
No. I wish that we could operate without it, but since we can't, I thought it was very important.
Where did you make your argument against the divisional committees?
Where did general faculty meeting.
You'd stand up and you'd make a speech.
Yeah, just discuss it. Yeah.
Did others share your view?
Well, I don't know. I sure not enough of them. Now, that committee, but I want to discuss too how we're on it. Outside committees that didn't have any. Well, I was Secretary Treasurer of the American Farm Economic Association for 15 years. If you didn't have that recorder on, I'd say things, but I don't want to boast.
Boast?
No. I ran as Secretary Treasurer because I was the only officer that was continued. Well, the board of directors served for 4 years, so they continued member, but of the officers, the president was only 1 year. Secretary Treasurer, as long as he was elected or retired, resigned, and I resigned at the end of 15 years. And then I was made president 1 year, but that's only 1 year.
What kind of work did the organization do?
Well, we did the kind of work that most any professional organization did, getting the members together once a year in an annual meeting and having programs, 3 days, extended programs, and papers dealing with the work of that organization. Yes, I was a strong organization man, strongly for organization. I was a board member for a number of years. I don't know how many, probably 15, of the American Institute of Cooperation. And I was chairman of the board from 1949 to 52. I retired in 53. That was very important, too, as a national organization. American Farm Economic Association was national. I was a member of the Agricultural Committee of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce for 5 or 6 years. I think elected 2 or 3 times on that. That, I thought, was important, but it had nothing to do with the department. Mm-hmm. None of these had anything to do with the department.
Was it common for members of the faculty members to be involved with the organization?
Well, I think it was if they were elected to those committees. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think so. You had to, you couldn't push yourself into it. You had to be enlisted by the organizations, like the American Farm Economic Association has a vote of total membership. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Same way with the, I don't know who did the appointment of the Agricultural Committee of the Chamber of Commerce, but I think it was the fellow head of the agricultural end of it. Mm-hmm. He selected them. And the American Institute of Cooperation, that you are elected mm-hmm. by the membership. I think my influence of agriculture economics was more important than some of these outside committees was in the department.
Mm-hmm. What would a department, an organization like the Chamber of Commerce, think about the cooperative movement? Did they find that a...
They never discussed it much, except when the members brought it up, and I, as a member, defended the cooperative movement every time I had a chance. Mm-hmm. The agricultural committee never dealt with it mm-hmm. as a subject, mm-hmm. but I often dealt with it.
Yeah. I was thinking, the Farm Bureau people you said you worked with some.
Yes, I got honorary recognition from the Farm Bureau.
Were they the Farm Bureau?
That is with the Wisconsin end of it.
Yeah, I was going to ask the Wisconsin Farm Bureau people. Were they happy enough with extension work in Wisconsin?
Well, they all received me well. Mm-hmm. I don't know about other extension workers. I don't think they were at odds at mm-hmm. all. Mm-hmm. I spoke at their meetings rather frequently. Mm-hmm. And as I say, I was no mossback conservative. I was against the Agricultural New Deal. Wasn't popular at all. Uh-huh. But that was because I didn't think they got at the source of the trouble. They kept farmers by supporting them, just handouts. They kept a lot of poor farmers in the businesses, but have made better carpenters and blacksmiths and that sort of thing, no doubt about it. Uh-huh. And you could have helped the farmers by reducing their number. But of course, it was unpopular because the old ringer, economic ringer, that would force them out of agriculture, you can't stand up and defend that.
Yeah.
No. I did, but you shouldn't.
How did the political people in Wisconsin feel about the cooperatives movement? I'm thinking right now about the La Follettes.
I never was close to them at all. Our minds didn't run the same channel.
Mm-hmm. Was Christensen involved with them, to your knowledge?
Well, as far as I know, he was supported by them mm-hmm. because they were in power. Mm-hmm. Well, they had to be. They had to have his support.
But whatever their concerns were, never made themselves felt with you personally?
No, they never became involved with my work.
Did you ever have concerns about academic freedom and your work? Were you ever concerned
about
it?
No, because I employed it consistently and frequently.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You see, Baldwin once told me that the staff, some members of staff, came down and talked to him about, and they wanted a new chairman because of my conservative views. And Ball says, well, did he ever keep you from expressing your views? No, he didn't. Well, why you object to his? Well, because he has more influence as chairman. So nobody ever interfered with my views. As far as I know, this evidence would indicate that sometimes they tried, but it never reached me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. From a rather ignorant and present day point of view, it seems to me that if someone said the cooperative movement, and how would you characterize a supporter of that, that the one word you'd never use is conservative.
Say that again.
You'd never consider, as I see things, if I've heard people think about things, you'd never characterize a backer of the cooperatives
as a conservative.
Yeah, where am I wrong on that?
I think you'd be ultra-conservative.
Can you explain?
Try to give them power, yes, mm-hmm. to compete with equal power. Mm-hmm. Isn't that conservative? Well, I guess it's a definition of what conservative is.
Yeah.
I never thought of it at all being inconsistent with my mossback conservatism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we talk about other kinds of farmers, the kind that had big capital. And
yeah.
Where do they fit in this conservative liberal framework?
I never came in contact with any of those kinds in Wisconsin. Now, they may have been here, but I never was with them. People accuse the Farm Bureau of being capitalist, but they were near that, and they were just the ordinary run of farmers in Wisconsin, the Farm Bureau members. I came in contact with them. I think they were probably the better financed of all the farmers. Now, I'm not sure of that even.
Yeah.
But they weren't the kind you're talking about
right.
at all.
Yeah.
I never rubbed elbows with them.
So would you say that most farming people in Wisconsin would have been interested and benefited from the cooperatives as they developed?
I think the farm people, the large majority of them, I would be vitally disappointed if it turned out different.
Yeah.
Very disappointing.
Something a little more mundane. Tell us about the facilities that the department had to work with, the offices. And
well, as far as I was concerned, they were adequate. But I once heard Leopold say during the Depression that a Bailey Guire University, one held together, you know, has some advantages as compared to those that are generously financed. Now, as I gathered from his argument, all he was trying to say was that finances alone don't do the job. They take something else.
Yes.
And so I always felt that. I was quite content with our facilities. As a matter of fact, I don't want to say this in front of your machine because I don't want it out. Turn it off, will you?
Turning it back on now.
All right, you do that. Yeah, I've talked about the rental room. I didn't want to discuss that.
Okay, well, how were the classrooms? Were you? Did you have enough room? Where
were they? We were all right. We went around here, there, and the other, and our offices were distributed among other buildings, too, which was an inconvenience. But that's kind of a hardship I expect.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have any worse, You're lucky.
Yeah. Do you have a library for the department?
A very limited one. Now, I gave away a professional library larger than this one. Larger than this one. And I might have given it to the department, except I knew they never could handle it. It'd just be piled up someplace. And I don't know whether you know it or not, but giving away a library, a professional library, if you want to keep it intact, is almost an impossible job. You can't give it to the university because they won't keep the duplicates. And, of course, two-thirds of everything I had, they'd have, so they'd have sold it.
Yeah.
You have to give it to a small school that don't have your subject at all and want it, or one is just beginning. Now, I should have given it to the International Institute of Geneva, but I didn't because it would be too expensive for me. I'd have to pack it and pay for the shipment and the overseas shipment, and I wouldn't have gotten, I don't think, any credit on my income tax for it. So I gave it to the Agricultural Hall of Fame, which had no library, but had ambitions to have one. And they sent a semi-trailer up here to pick it up.
Why?
Yeah.
Where's the Agricultural Hall of Fame?
It's in a village outside of Kansas City. I stopped there once to look at the library, and they had it in a room by itself. And it was in good shape, and I was surprised.
Yeah, well, that's nice.
Yeah.
It's nice. Would you like to add any more comments about the department?
No, you see, it's so long ago that I'm just not up to date about it at all. I know very few people, very few. Most of them are dead. I know Parsons, Charles in a nursing home. I think I know any of the new people at all. The names aren't even familiar to me.
Well, we don't. Our concern is into the 50s and back anyway.
Well, mine would have to be behind 53.
Yeah, we don't care about that modern stuff. We just want to
I get you. Yeah. Well, no, I'm going to answer your questions any one. We're going to loaf until noon.
Okay. Well, let's ask you about the agriculture deans. You've mentioned some things about Christensen and Fred and Baldwin. Is there any way that would make sense to characterize what each of them was trying to do as dean, or how they operated as dean?
No. I got along with all of them. I had less contact with Fred than any of them. And you asked me in there something to also comment on the presence of the university, didn't you?
Yeah, that's the next question.
Oh, it is. Well,
you like to do that?
I can't comment. I can tell you a story about Dykstra. I knew Frank well because I was on the athletic board during the time they fired us and him.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's put us close together. I didn't consider about him. I'll tell you about Dykstra.
Should we turn off the tape recorder?
Well, I'll tell you if he turns off. Now, Dykstra. When I was a student at the University of Kansas, he taught political science. And I took one of his courses. And then when he came here as president, they used to have for a time, a freshman convocation in which they invited different members of the faculty to speak to it. And somebody invited me. And Dykstra introduced me. And during his introduction, he said that he knew me well. He had me in class at the University of Kansas, and he looked up my grade, and I got a 2, and a 2 is the equivalent of a B here. And when I got up to speak, I said, yes, I was in President Dykstra's class when he taught at the University of Kansas, and he's correct, I got a B. But I always attributed that B to Professor Dykstra's failure to recognize genius when he met up with I didn't know Dykstra very well, so that's about all I have to say about it.
What kind of a teacher was he? Do you remember anything about that?
No. I don't remember much about the course because it wasn't. He was in political science, but the course I took was English history of England. Evidently, he didn't have enough political science to occupy his time.
In the president's office, Ira Baldwin brought up this name. It was new to us, and we're trying to learn all we can. And the name is Miss Julia Wilkinson. Did you have anything to do with her?
No, I know the name is familiar, but was she connected with the president's office?
Yes.
Yeah.
She was the secretary.
The name is familiar, but I never had any contact with her.
How about McCaffrey, Maurice McCaffrey?
Well, I knew Cap McCaffrey because what committee was it that got involved with him? He was head of the business operations. Mm-hmm. But I knew Peterson well because we were members of a dinner club. And he ate at my house and I ate at his house. Mm-hmm. And I thought he was very competent, Peterson. Mm-hmm. I didn't think McCaffrey was incompetent or anything. I just didn't have any opinion.
Yeah. Peterson, everyone we speak with who knew him, gives about the same evaluation that you just did.
Uh-huh. I think he was very capable.
He wasn't, he did some teaching in commerce, but as I understand it, he wasn't actually a faculty person the way you were.
No, I didn't know he ever taught anything.
I think he was a lecturer.
He could have. I didn't know him.
But that didn't seem to stand in the way of his being appreciated at the university.
What?
The fact that he wasn't a faculty man didn't seem to interfere with his being respected.
Oh, no. He was... He had a very responsible position. He's the one that made up the budgets, heavens.
Mm-hmm.
What position would be more responsible?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, what kind of personality did he have? What was he like?
Well, he was just one of us.
Uh-huh.
He would fit into this group right here. He wouldn't be any different for you and me, which I think is commendable. I may boast.
Did you have anything to do with the graduate school, with Slichter or Fred or Baldwin or Albion?
No, I didn't have any contact to mount anything with them. Slichter gave me a grant when I first came for investigating the marketing of cheese, and I did it at Bulletin, and I don't think he liked it at all. But anyway, I got that grant, and that's the only one. I never asked for one because we had the experiment station funds.
So did people in your department that you know of receive WARF aid?
No, I don't think that they were. We were eligible. I think the University Alumni Research Foundation was limited to grants, I think by charter. Now, you can correct me on this. You better look it up. It's limited to the physical and biological sciences. I don't think social sciences are eligible at all for that fund, because I think the fellow who set it up was interested in promoting each other, which was his privilege.
Sure.
But I think you ought to look into that, because you've got that question.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that question involves social studies.
It's a real slippery question.
Is it?
Yeah, from what we can gather, there's no charter or no official statement that said that you couldn't do it.
But didn't it emphasize the other?
Oh, definitely. The policy clearly was that
been my understanding that we were not eligible.
And from time to time, people had said that it was contrary to the charter,
I guess,
to support it, but I don't think it was. I think
let me say that we never considered. Sure. We thought it'd be a waste of time to ask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I spoke with Mrs. Begholt of Carl Begholt was a philosophy professor.
Yeah.
And she says that her husband received a grant during the 30s.
He did.
Yeah. And that was the first one, and it was considered.
Probably the only one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Token grant.
Being in agriculture, you may not have anything to say about this, although you have mentioned celery before. I was wondering if you had anything to say about celery or Ingram.
I knew celery well. But as I say, my only real contact is when he separated us from the economics department at a noon luncheon.
Uh-huh. Ingram?
Well, Ingram I knew well, too, and liked very well. But I knew nothing about his deanship.
Yeah. How about the committees? Maybe we could look at...
Well, I think you got me for one committee that I don't ever remember. It could be, but I don't ever remember. Read the committees.
Athletic Board?
Yes, that was...
Lectures and Convocation?
Those I don't remember. If it was on that committee, I don't ever remember it meeting.
Well, it was a one-year appointment. We took it out of the... all we have to do is... All we have to work with is the university catalog.
I get you.
So we go through year by year by year.
Yeah, I don't remember that one. The rest of them I remember.
How about... You want to ask me about the athletic board?
Tell us about your involvement on the athletic board.
Well, the involvement on the athletic board was that... I think I was that a 2-year appointment or three? I was 4 years.
4 years.
So I was twice, I think, 2-year appointment. And during that time, we had a controversy, Elwell was head of athletics, wasn't he? Deanwell.
Meanwell.
Head of athletics. And there was a group, alumni group, that was opposed to Elwell, and we kept him on the athletic board, and the regents fired him, and of course we resigned immediately, because the regents turned over the sole responsibility for athletics to the faculty, and the faculty is the one that elected us. When the regents rejected the faculty, well, we resigned. And they of course, the regents let Meanwell go, and Frank, too. Mm-hmm. And then the question came up in the faculty whether the faculty had control of athletics, and Celery read the fight that it did. Of course, it didn't when they rejected us. But the faculty said they did. So that cleared the university with NCAA, National Collegiate Athletic Association.
When the regents overruled you, Were you expecting that? Were you surprised?
Yes, we carried our resignations in our pockets for some time.
Why? Go ahead.
Well, they had indicated, members had, that they probably would.
Do you remember any of the members?
What's that?
Do you remember any of the regents who were the leaders in the Delta? I could show you a list with that.
Well, I could pick out some of them, but I don't think it serves any useful purpose. I don't know how any member of the regents voted, except I know the regents are all voted.
Why did you elect to keep me?
We couldn't get any other suitable person. As a matter of fact, they delegated me to go see Guy Loman to make him director of athletics. But the head of the Department of Education, Loman was conducting a series of courses in the Department of Education, and if he'd have gone with us, they'd had to get somebody else, and they wouldn't agree to it at all. And if they wouldn't agree to it, Guy Loman wouldn't accept it. So Guy Loman was out. And we just couldn't find any other suitable person to do it.
So it was not a matter of, it was a matter of not being able to find anyone.
Yeah, it was a matter not to better the situation.
Right, if Loman had said yes, I could do
it. We'd have voted for Loman in a minute.
You'd have gotten rid of Meanwell then.
Yeah, we'd let Meanwell go.
Okay. What was wrong with Meanwell?
You see, when you replay on your own athletic board and you replace somebody, you got to get somebody in your stead. And that we weren't able to do. It was a very controversial position.
Why did the regents want to get rid of Meanwell so badly? What was wrong with it?
I suspect it was personality in part. He wasn't a lovable person, but he was, I thought, pretty capable.
What did you view as your general responsibility as a member of the athletic board?
We ran the athletic department, of course. We made the budget, acted on salaries.
Did you want to have big-time teams?
What's that?
Did you want to have big-time athletic teams?
I don't believe that bothered us. What bothered us was getting enough money to support what we had. Well, listen, if I remember rightly, now, I don't always remember correctly. And when you get to be my age, you won't either.
Okay.
I think we operated the first year that I went in, 1932, at the beginning of the break, for the whole athletic board for $87,000. Now, I'm not sure of that figure, but that sticks in our mind, and I know this, it was a pittance, and pay all the salaries, coaches and so forth. Oh, we had a hard time getting by, just keeping together.
What were the big athletic teams in those days? What areas? Was football a big thing?
Oh, football generated more income than all the rest combined. Yeah.
Boxing?
Boxing, I was there doing its height. It's more than self-supported itself.
Where did the matches take place?
The what?
Where were the matches?
They were in the field house. Yeah. Boxing, basketball, those three had to support everything.
Was boxing well attended?
Yes, boxing, very popular in one thing.
Students and faculty alike?
Well, later, I wasn't on the board when they banned it. the faculty was just against that kind of sport. And I can understand why. What you're trying to do is injure somebody. Not seriously, but put them out and put them under. And the fellow, the graduate student that Froker helped organize Lake to Lake Cooperative, which was one of the big ones, he was a heavyweight boxer and champion. Now, if you can think of that name, you know who the heavyweight boxer was at that time.
Well, we got something to work on.
I don't think of his name.
All I know is he's the kind of guy I'd call sir.
Yes, you administer him. Yeah. That's like the old story about a colored fellow that went up north, and he turned down south, and some of his friends said to him, well, why did you come back? Well, he says, for this reason. Up north, they shake your hand and they mister you, but they don't feed you. And feeding was important.
Yeah. So, yeah. The faculty, were there sort of groups or camps of the faculty? Some were just playing against student athletics? How did the faculty, what was the tone of faculty feeling about athletics? Is there anything you can say about that?
I don't think the faculty was against athletics in general at all. Mm-hmm. I think they voted out boxing because they thought it wasn't a sport that should be promoted. That's just as simple as that. Mm-hmm. They weren't against anybody in it. They just thought it wasn't. But as far as I know, they were favorable to athletics, but I myself thought academic standards should not in any way be compromised by athletics. And I think faculty thought that too.
Were people appointed to the athletic board because they were especially interested in athletics, or did that matter? Do you know?
Well, Frank appointed me, but I don't think he ever discussed with me while I was interested what I think that they tried to do. And this may sound a little odd boasting, but I think they just want dependable people. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I considered myself dependable.
Is that considered an important committee?
Oh, it was. And it still is, yeah. The faculty has to control athletics by NCAA standards. That's why the regents gave it up. And I'd say it's very important.
You mentioned Guy Lohman. Could you tell us a little bit about him?
Well, I didn't know him well, but he was a respected leader in athletics. And he taught courses, a series of courses, or at least he was, if I could describe it, he was the head of the organization of courses on athletics by the education department of the university, the Department of Education. And they wouldn't release him at all. He must have been good. And if they wouldn't release him, he wasn't interested. Because I went to see him and the head of the education department, and the head of the education department just turned me down cold. Just didn't want to discuss it at all.
That was Anderson, right?
Yeah, that was Anderson. I couldn't think of his name, but you can get it for me. It's all.
Remember anything about the Regent Faculty Conference Committee?
Well, I was on that a good deal, but the only time that I remember is when we discussed whether the faculty had control of athletics. And we didn't, but they voted we did because they wanted to keep out of trouble with NCAA, and Celery led the fight.
What did you see as the function of that particular committee? Did it do anything important?
I can't remember that we did.
Yeah.
I see, as far as that, and I was on there a good deal, but my memory just blank as far as anything.
Well, that may be because nothing much happened.
Well,
that's what Ira Baldwin said.
Yeah, I don't know. I remember anything happened.
Remember the library committee? That was in the late 30s.
Well, yes. I wasn't a very active member of that committee, but and they could have got along, the librarian could have gotten along without us when I was on it. But he brought up a discussion of purchasing new books and how many and that sort of thing, and we went along with him, as far as I remember.
Do you remember anything about the library itself, how adequate it was, what it was, that sort of thing?
Well, I just remember this, that for my purposes, it was adequate. And had it been inadequate, I'd remembered.
Yeah.
You see.
Yeah, good. Again, the divisional committee. Did you have anything else you wanted to mention? What was it that you thought turned out to be important about your
work? Oh, I think we did a lot of things about courses. Mm-hmm. That is, I think, as it turned out, if we rejected a course, it was rejected. Yeah, I consider it pretty important. If I talk about books, let me show you a book. This section over here, all the books were 100 years old or older when they were in here, and some of them have been in quite a number of years, so they're a lot older. But age alone don't make a book important. But this book, I think, is important because of its age. And I picked it up in Oslo, my last trip there, which was 48. The university had an exhibition of old books, and they had five or six of mine, and that's what they said about it. They really authenticated them. Can you read the date of publication?
1612.
Yeah, Plymouth College.
Yeah.
It's in English. That's probably why I was able to buy it now. So.
Yeah. It belonged to somebody.
Oh, yes.
Parker.
It's a secondhand book.
More than secondhand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
20th-hand book.
Yeah, triplet group, quadruplet group, well, that's it. I just wanted to show you. That's the oldest book I've got.
Can we just open it up to
Well, you got to be careful with this book.
Be very careful with it.
There's too many engravings in it.
Oh, yes, that's written. It's like Chaucer almost.
Yeah, sure, it'd have to be.
Good shape, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, of course, it's been rebound.
Uh-huh.
But the paper, that's the way they don't authenticate it.
That is good paper.
You best.
Close this back to you. Makes me nervous.
Shall I take it back?
You don't know where to put it. I do.
Okay.
1612.
It's a ways back. Well, these questions all have to do with the faculty's part in conducting its affairs throughout the whole university.
I see. Well,
and so on.
I attended practically every faculty meeting when I was in town, because I thought it was a duty. Not that I thought it'd give them any help or anything. I just thought it was a duty. You had a question there about the spouse, so whether she entertained or organizations. I merely want to say this, that we've always entertained extensively since we were married, because we're just that nature. And I used to have the faculty at the house for dinner once a year, the whole faculty.
The department faculty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had my graduate students, my graduate students, to the house for dinner once a year. I used to have the whole faculty of the university that wanted to come for picnics out here in Little Norway in the afternoon on the grounds. So that answers that question.
It sure does.
And you asked, too, what organizations she belonged to. Her memory is not sufficient to tell me. Her memory isn't as good as mine, and that's pretty bad. But I know she belonged to the Daughters of Demeter, which was an agricultural ladies' organization, and the AAUW. I know she belonged to those two fathers. I don't know.
Uh-huh. Did the AAUW people meet at a place called the Vilas House?
We used to, yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. And we've been there when they met.
Have you? Could you tell us a little about that house and how they...
Well, that house was, of course, the big office building on the land where it was. Yeah. It overlooked the lake. It was a big house. For me, never very attractive inside. It was built on to entertain President Cleveland on a visit here. Vilas built on, and it probably was the biggest house in town, or almost at any time. But as I say, it wasn't the kind of a house that attracted me either inside or out. Uh-huh. But it was probably comfortable to live in.
Did members of the AAUW, what did they do? Did some of them live in that house?
I don't know what connection AAUW was to that house, because there were no violences there when they met.
Yeah.
And I don't even know who owned it or who lived there, if anybody.
Yeah. And we're just starting to find out about it. It was only mentioned to me last week.
Next time I see you, I may ask you, what about it?
Okay.
We may be able to tell you.
Yeah, you may.
We're working on finding out.
Well, what I was going to say is, he drove down to the lake, and they overlooked the lake, but of course there was quite a space between the house and the lake.
Yeah. Was that before the hotel down there?
Yes, that's way before this. Is.
At the faculty meetings, who were the leaders?
Well, I'm not sure they had any leaders at faculty meetings. They had an agenda. And the people that led at that meeting was the one who was interested in that agenda. Of course, I suspect that the deans had more influence than anybody else at that meeting. But I'm not even sure of that.
Does anybody stand out? Can you remember a celery at a faculty meeting?
No, I can't even approach naming a leader at faculty meeting. I just can't.
Did you speak out much at faculty meetings?
No. I only spoke when I was against something, you know. And that wasn't often. But I did speak against these divisionals. Uh-huh. And not much, but just expressed doubts.
What did you think about the... What did the faculty meeting mean to the control of the university? Or what did it mean otherwise?
Well, I know that we... At certain times, we've cast votes for something. As a matter of fact, I know that Kiekhofer and I were nominated for membership in the university committee, which was then the head committee. Kiekhofer was elected, I think, by two or three votes. He died, and then I was either elected or appointed to fill his place. You haven't got me on the university faculty meeting. But that's because at that election, Kiekhofer was elected. But he died before the end of his term. I know we voted on that mm-hmm. at faculty meeting.
Mm-hmm. What did you do?
We just cash files while you were there. You didn't send them in or anything.
Uh-huh.
They just...
What did you do on the university committee? You remember anything about that work?
Well, I remember one discussion because Fred came and lobbied for a member of the athletic board. It was one of his, I think, foreign colleagues in the Department of Bacteriology. And Fred came into argument, so the faculty meeting must have had something to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
Fred came to argue.
What would he do when he lobbied?
Well, he just talked to us and asked us to give favorable consideration to this member.
Mm-hmm.
There must have been more than one of them.
Mm-hmm. Do you have more about
it? No, that's up.
The... University Club about 2 weeks ago turned over its records to us.
Yeah.
And we've been having a lot of fun looking at those.
Did you find out that I was president there for about 3 or 4 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's another subject that so many people mention to us is important, but few people have explained to us very well about what happened there.
I thought it was very important. One thing against the University Club, in my estimation, was that it had a lot of dormitory rooms, and they were rented out to students, I think mostly graduate students. And that detracted from the club, in my estimation. If we could have filled those with faculty members, that would be different. But we had to have the money, so we rented it out to students. But during my presidency, I think every department, if there were any that didn't, I don't know what they were, held their departmental meetings at a luncheon meeting at the faculty club. The faculty club was described by somebody as a Soviet of departmental luncheon meetings. I thought it was very important. But the union fed them over there. They didn't have to join in order to eat over at the union. And evidently, after my time as the war, membership kept dwindling. I'm sorry to see it. I thought it was a very important adjunct to the faculty.
You talked about the faculty financial woes while you were president of the university club. Did you talk about did you try to overcome them, or how did you?
Well, what we had to do is to reject a good many proposals that involved expenses that we feared we couldn't meet. That's about the way you try to overcome them. You don't go out and start chopping here and there. You just reject new proposals.
There's about three sort of key times, key things, or at least events that we've identified in a 10-year period, early 30s through the middle of the 1940s, that we're kind of interested in following up, and I'll just ask you about each of them. The first one has to do with when women were accepted into membership into the club. And I don't understand how that works. The minutes don't make it clear. Do you recall that was about 1932 or 1933?
Well, ever since I knew it, and that would be 31 would be my first contact, but ever since I knew it, at least I thought women were accepted as members.
Yeah,
certainly for the public rooms downstairs and for the dining room.
Mm-hmm.
There were never any restrictions. Mm-hmm. As far as I know, we never rented any dormitories to women.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't during my time. But there were no requests.
Yeah. I guess at one time there was thought about renting rooms to married couples.
Well, I think it was discussed. Yes.
That was quite a bit later, I think.
Yes, I never took part in it.
Do you remember the discussions that took place about turning the property of the club over to the university? That was about 1934.
Yes, I remember. I remember the bitter complaint of the head of the Commerce Department, Elwell, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He had bought bonds in the University Club, and in order for the university to accept it, they had to cancel those bonds. And he was bitter about that because he was forced by the chairman of his department when he was a young man to buy the bonds, and he never got anything out of it. And if he was correct, then I think the regents were wrong in canceling the bonds and letting the fellow who owned it bear the brunt.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the only phase that I remember, because we were very anxious that the university take it over, because we wanted university heat. That was very important.
Mm-hmm.
So Elwell wasn't opposed to the university taking over the university?
No, he was opposed to canceling his bonds.
His
darn right he was opposed. He was bitter.
Yeah, I can see why.
And I think he is right.
Had you heard of any other instances where a department chairman more or less forced people to buy?
No, that's the only one, and I'm not sure that he wasn't exaggerating. But he thought the chairman forced him. At least his purchases weren't his old volition, his own free will.
Yeah. The third instance had you sort of at the center of it, from what we can tell. It was when you were president, and it had to do with that fellow named Burke, the black fellow.
That Burke. Yeah, I didn't remember his name, but I can give you my side of the complete history. He was a graduate student, and we didn't know that he was, when they rented a room to him, the girls didn't know he's black. He came in and he was black. Now, if he'd have been a faculty member from instructor up, there wouldn't have been an issue at all. We know that he'd have been a member because the policy would be that all faculty members. But the fact that he was a graduate student raised questions in my mind. And the board voted very closely to admit him. And I just said to the board, well, I think we ought to refer this as a referendum to the membership And the membership voted 2-1 to let him in. That was it, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Now, there would have been no, in my estimation, there would have been no question at all had he been a faculty member. Because mm-hmm. that was already taken care of. He was eligible. Mm-hmm. It's just whether we want to let graduate students in.
Was it, did it become?
I wasn't against it. I wasn't for it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's the way you come across in the documents, too.
What?
That's the way you come across in the documents.
And I was against it?
No, that you were neutral.
Yes, were, I just thought the membership.
You were the president of
yeah,
the
Yeah, that's what it is.
was that a big issue on campus? Or not?
Well, there was a lot of heat generated over that one incident.
Yeah.
Yes. And I was the brunt of it, but I didn't pay attention to it. As I said, I've been a controversial figure most of my life, and I kind of get used to that. Yeah. I'm not sure I don't enjoy it.
Were there other important events or problems that came up at the university club that we should try to learn about to come to your mind?
Well, they don't come to my mind now, and I haven't thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
I know that one project was we were thinking about some way extending the facilities of the club to provide greater service, and one was to have an open snack bar down in the basement someplace. And we got Don Halverson, who was head of dormitory and commons at that time, to draw a design. And he drew a rather elaborate design for it. And when I brought up the board, they turned it down because we didn't have the money to complete it. And Don never was happy with me on that. We shouldn't have asked him, but we did.
Weren't you in the dining club with Don?
What?
Weren't you in the dining club with Don Halverson?
Yeah, I was in two dining clubs. Don Halverson? We had a fellow in the department, I think, with him, Halverson. But I don't remember in a dining club, but I belong to two dining clubs.
Why don't you tell us about those?
Huh?
Why don't you tell us about those?
Well, one, they're both going yet. One was a former club. You wore tuxedo at dinner once a month during school months. That club is still going, as far as I know.
Do you recall the name of that club?
I didn't have any name.
Oh.
No, it was just a dining club. And it was an elite club. Frank was a member, president, at the time I was taken in. And practically all except me were important faculty members when I was taken in.
Who were some of them?
Well, he was head of, you could have to tell me, one of them was head of comparative literature, another was head of the Department of Philosophy. Can you give me the name?
McGilvery?
Otto? McGilvery, and the one that was comparative literature.
I don't know that.
He's a close friend of McGilvery.
I'll be able to tell you that in a few weeks.
Yes, you could. One was head of wasn't botany, what's the animal size?
Zoology?
I think zoology. I can't think of their names at all. I can just say who they were.
Well, we can find their names.
Yeah. And
well, you were the head of that.
I was head of, well, I was later. I wasn't at the time of taking in 31. Hibbard was, but I was in 32. But I was taking in, I think, first 2 or 3 weeks after the semester opened, two people came and get me, and one of the fellows that came was head of genetic science, what do we call it, in the College of Agriculture.
Called genetics.
course, all of these fellows are gone dead long ago, but this was 31.
Brink?
Huh?
Brink? Call?
Brink?
Could that be it?
No, there was a Brink that I knew, but I don't think in that connection.
What did you do at the meeting, at the dinner?
Oh, it's just a discussion meeting. Discuss anything that anybody brought up. Uh-huh. Ever. Yeah. You had a wonderful meal. There's just no question about that. You had a wonderful meal, and you had a little aperitif before and something to settle it after you got through. And then you spent the evening together till about 12 o'clock. Now, that's one club. The other club is one that I, in a way, helped organize, in which Baldwin was and Andrew Weaver. Mm-hmm. And I was assigned soliciting two members from the agricultural end, of which head of game management was one. And I think I was also supposed to talk to Baldwin about coming in. That was my part. But wait a minute. I can give you some documentary evidence. The first meeting was held at my house. I want to discuss the letter, if you do.
Mr. Frank?
No, what's that?
There's a letter to Mr. Frank from you. What do you need?
No, I want a glass.
Here.
That's the one I want. That's calling a regular meeting. Frank was vice president of the Wisconsin Power and Light Company. No, that was you'll find in here.
I think they'd be farther back.
Well, maybe it will. Just keep going. There's much more writing in that. That's just calling a regular meeting at my house.
Did you have many people like Mr. Frank who were citizens rather than university people in your club?
Yeah, and in both clubs later.
Is this from the one from Little Handwritten?
No.
You wrote that one, too.
Yeah, that's what I wrote. On the Norway Station. That's a reply to somebody that invited me. No, the one I want is a historic document. It was the first meeting of the club, and the way I want to say is, I put down P.S. Wear black tie and socks, S.O.X. And you know, I proposed that we dress for it, and boy, they turned me down cold. Because the other club, which I belonged that time, it kind of picked up my spirits to dress up and go to it. Yeah. And that was the part I wanted to discuss, the black tie and socks.
I know it's in there. I remember reading that.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Well, all right. That's all I wanted to say. That club's still going.
It is.
Andrew Weaver and I were part of them. Frank helped us of the Power and Light Company. Uh-huh. And who else did I get from the Department of the College of Agriculture? Baldwin came in. You see, the the difficulty in organizing a club there. Practically all the people you ordered as a member already belong to a dining club. That's it. Baldwin was, I did. The head of game management, he did. He joined, but Baldwin joined, I joined.
Here it is, dinner jacket, black tie, and socks.
That's it, that's the one. That was just, that's all I wanted to discuss.
January 1941.
Yeah, that was the first meeting of the club.
Why were there so many of them? Nowadays, dining clubs. Nowadays, most people never heard of a dining club.
I don't know. To me, they were kind of important, too. Yeah, you had this difficulty in electing members because they had to have a dining room that could seat 12 people. And that wasn't always the case. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't have it without a dining room where they could seat 12 people comfortable.
As far as you know, did other universities around the country have similar types of dining clubs?
Well, I never came in contact with them at the State College of Washington or Columbia University. They may have had them, but I never came in contact with those. Those were the other two. And I taught summer school at both Northwestern one summer and Cornell, but of course, they wouldn't have been operative there. No, I never come in contact with them.
Yeah. Well, I think we've run through all of the questions I had set out.
Well, you go to it, boys, because we're going to go and get some flour and cabbage when you get through.
Well, let me tell the history for the historians who may be listening to this 100 years from now. You will envy us. John and I have had a wonderful lunch here. We have squash, a bag full of squash to take home with us, and wonderful conversation with all members of the Hobson family. And we're now on our way to get flowering squash, which I
think
is cabbage, which I've never seen
you
before
bet.
In my life.
Flowering squash and flowering kale. There's a difference. The difference is not in the bloom, it's in the leaf.
You can show us the difference.
I think I can. You see, I'm not sure what I'm giving you because I don't know whether the weather hurts it or not. It don't change the looks of mine out here.
Uh-huh.
And we'll go down. I have to take a cart because I don't walk very well or very far.